Hello, welcome to ATM, Artists Talk Movies, a podcast interviewing creatives about films that have inspired and or influenced their personal studio work. I'm Hyde Fontenot, and I'm here with co-host Aaron Stafford.
We're here to talk about contemporary art and the creative impulse with new guests each episode. We're having casual conversations.
We don't pretend to be authorities.
We're hoping to give you a window into the visionary process of makers.
You too. Happy 30th episode.
I know, it's an anniversary for us. Oh my goodness. Right.
We're out of our 20s now.
Did you get me a diamond ring or something?
Yeah, okay. Yeah. It's here somewhere. This week, This is unusual because we don't have a guest artist this week because we just wanted to speak directly with one another, and there's what we're going to talk about, one of my favorite films ever, which is Rosemary's Baby by Roman Polanski.
Exactly.
And fully acknowledging, well, we'll get to it. We're in a position to talk about how we feel about, like, separating artists from their art and perhaps an artist's problematic behavior from the artwork, and if we can still enjoy it, if we can still watch it.
I think that this is not the only case where people are struggling with this. It's something that not, and this happens in the art world. I mean, we're no stranger to certain bad behavior that comes out. Even here in Dallas, we've had some, you know, some accusations. Yeah. And so, yeah, it'll be a tricky one, but I think we can appreciate this and talk about its complexity and the spirit of the film.
Yeah.
And we can also talk about the director as well. I think that's fine.
Sure.
You know.
Well, okay, so Rosemary's Baby, because of my Catholic background, like, this film is so terrifying, and but it just goes beyond that too. It's like rewatching it in 2022 and just seeing kind of what maybe passed for normal behavior among a married heterosexual couple.
The film is wild. I mean, it really is a product of its time in some ways, because there's that whole satanic panic.
Sure. That happened in the 80s.
Right, right. Yeah.
Now, this is based on a novel by Ira Levin from 1967, I believe. And then I think the film's produced the very next year, 1968. And horror schlock king William Castle produced this.
Oh, okay.
And I'd read that he purchased the rights to make the film version before the book was even published.
Oh, yeah.
I was really, I'd never noticed his name in the credits before, because I associate him with films like The Tingler, where he, I know it sounds like something you'd buy at Target, right? but it's actually, he made this film about this, a monster that, like, you know, gave people an electrical jolt, and he wired all the theater seats to have electric going through them. So it was like, he was the king of the gimmick. And I look at Rosemary's Baby as such an artful film.
Yes.
Like, so, and also I feel like that's, so Ira Levin, when he talks about having written Rosemary's Baby, it was after he'd written a play that really flopped on Broadway. And so this was something to redeem himself. What am I going to say about this? He's looking at very topical information, like things that are happening in the news, and actually, like, within the film, the Pope is visiting New York City, and the neighbor who is the leader of the Satanic Church, Adrian Mercado, is that his name, Mercado?
Oh, I don't know.
Adrian?
I'm still learning.
Oh. But you saw the film.
I did. Yeah.
It's a lot to keep up with.
Wasn't he in it? He had a...
Oh, not Anton LaVey. No.
Oh, that's a different...
The film.
Okay.
Their neighbor, who is married to Ruth Gordon.
Yes. That fellow. What's his name here?
I think it's...
Roman, because I remember...
Roman Cassavetes. Right. So, yeah, Roman is critical of the Pope visiting, saying that, like, if the newspapers are ever on strike, the Pope won't visit because it's show business.
And this is in the movie.
This is in the movie.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
It's first dinner party when they're new neighbors.
And Rosemary's being a little like, oh, I was raised Catholic. And they're like, oh, that's so lame.
Right. Like, I'm not offended, but like, you can tell that it's a little shocking to hear like these different points of view. And she's from Nebraska, I believe.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, so. Kind of out of her comfort zone, maybe.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. Could you tell our audience your history with this movie?
Oh, gosh. You know, I don't remember the first time I saw it, but I really did sort of grow up being afraid of supernatural things.
Mm-hmm.
So,
talking snakes.
I don't know if I really ever believed biblical things, but I was really afraid and titillated by horror films.
Uh-huh.
Like, are you familiar with the British, there was a British production company called Hammer.
Mm-hmm.
And even Kate Bush has a song, Hammer Horror.
Oh,
but it was like, these were all very sexy, scary movies.
Okay.
Where there were like, vampire.
It meant to be titillating.
Yes. Yeah. Like buxom, vampy vampire women with big bouffant hairdos and trotting around in lingerie.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was a kid, there was just nothing more exciting or terrifying than that. Where am I going with that? First seeing... Yeah. I have no recollection of seeing this film for the first time.
Weird. That's okay. Do you think you were like in your 20s or?
I really don't know.
What?
But I guess I was 4 years old when the film was produced. Mm-hmm. But
probably not an appropriate film.
Yeah. And I don't even know if my family would have been very Catholic, they would have.
The Pope did not like this movie, from what I understand.
Oh.
Which I think gives it a lot of credibility, obviously.
Right.
So, and I think your first pick, The Devil's the Pope, also did not like that. So you have a winning streak here.
If the Pope hates it, we love it.
Yeah.
Well, you know, interesting. I'm reading something that Ira Levin, the author of the book, wrote about how he feels semi-responsible for the rise in evangelical Christianity, because he sort of brought like this notion that Satanic Church could be real. He brought that into the popular imagination in the
60s. Yeah. Bummer.
Yeah. So, you know, it's sort of like talking about opposing forces.
Yeah.
Like,
You had The Exorcist that came out after this, I think.
In the 70s, maybe like 75.
Okay. So
I'll
have
to look.
It started kind of maybe a snowball of these like horror religious.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think there was another one too that.
And actually, there's a really fantastic podcast that I'll try to find the link to about when you mentioned Satanic Panic in the 80s and where that came from.
Mm-hmm.
And it actually came from a charlatan who went on the talk show circuit and convinced people that he had been a high priest in the Satanic Church. And he was a compulsive liar. And he had no such experience, but he talked about human sacrifices and things that
came from.
Infants. Mm-hmm. And people were so hungry for that content that they didn't really check it. It was like, he was on Oprah. He was on Donahue. And he became an advisor to people in very powerful positions in the police departments and the government.
But wasn't there a child sacrifice or attempted child sacrifice in the Bible? Like,
oh yes,
I'm just saying that.
Well, right. Like Ben was telling us, he was kind of making jokes about this, but like Yeah, like...
It's a little hypocritical to be criticizing, you know, Satan worship. Like, come on, y'all. Right. Have you read the Bible?
Well, and it's another kind of us, you know, mm-hmm. we're going to pick your pocket while we tell you to mm-hmm. be afraid of your neighbor. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like the kind of damage that, well, it's so grotesque mm-hmm. and overbearing right now mm-hmm. that it's hard to talk about what's happening right now mm-hmm. with Roe v. Wade in the mm-hmm. name of protecting children mm-hmm. when there's nothing else to take care of children after they're born.
It's a little silly. And then, I mean, I know this is not quite on the topic of Rosemary's Baby, but right now we're having a baby formula shortage. I guess it's right. related.
Yeah.
And speaking of babies, and so right now, in case you all don't know, or maybe you're listening to this way into the future.
when everybody's dead. Thank God.
So our government is trying to pass legislation to make baby formula more accessible because we are in a shortage and for a lot of reasons that we don't want to get into because that's boring. But so a lot of Republicans voted against this, mm-hmm. this, you know, measure to make this happen. And it's like,
yeah.
but you're just advocating to have uh-huh. babies and now you're not wanting to help the mothers. It feels a little disingenuous
yeah.
to me.
Well, I think some of it's happening around the border. We have these detention centers for illegal immigrants.
This still goes back to the abortion thing because it's like, so the mothers at the border, uh-huh. their children don't matter.
Right.
But the other children do, the American right. children, but not those. And it's just like, well, where are you drawing the line
it's absurd.
Here? It's a little
yeah.
silly. So it's like either you want all babies to live or you have to just accept yeah. the fact that. You know.
And also, in terms of adhering to the Geneva Convention, mm-hmm. these people are actually detained by our government. If
yes.
we do not provide food to them and yeah. basic comforts, we are in violation of the Geneva Convention.
Which is a human rights violation.
Right,
big,
right.
Big
which
deal.
We're certain to see more of
yes,
in the next few years.
Hyde, could you give us a recount of Rosemary's
Oh,
Baby?
Yeah. Okay. So Rosemary Woodhouse uh-huh. is a newlywed, uh-huh. and she's married to Guy Woodhouse. Mm-hmm. So Rosemary's played by Mia Farrow, mm. and Guy Woodhouse, her husband, is played by John Cassavetes, mm-hmm. who's a film director and actor in his own right.
Yeah.
So within this film, they're married newlyweds.
Yeah.
And they're looking for an apartment, mm-hmm. and they happen to find an apartment.
Steel.
Yeah, yeah, and this really great old kind yeah. of spooky apartment, and I think they use the Dakota apartment building
yes.
that was where John Lennon lived when he was assassinated.
Yeah.
But they use that as the location.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure how many sets are built or if they used everything. I'm sure some things were built,
yeah.
but for the exteriors.
Yeah.
So anyway, they find this apartment, mm-hmm. They take it, mm-hmm. they find out, they've got these, it seems like everybody in the apartment building's kind of old.
Older.
And
except for that one woman at the beginning who's doing laundry.
That's right. That's right. Okay. Thanks for bringing that up.
I forget what her name is.
So Rosemary's doing laundry early yeah. in the film. She's yeah. doing laundry in the basement. And she's really creeped out.
Because that's where the women belong. The laundry room.
Right. So she meets this woman. I forget the character's name.
Is it?
Oh, Terry.
Terry,
yeah. And Terry explains to her that she's staying with Rosemary's neighbors, mm-hmm. The Cassavetes, who she hasn't met yet.
Mm-hmm.
But they're an older couple, and she says, I was a drug addict mm-hmm. and a lot of other things. I think she's hinting that she was a sex worker, etc.
Yeah.
And she was like, they literally picked me up off the street
mm-hmm.
and are providing for me.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, I'm so grateful for them. So Rosemary's coming. Mm-hmm. Rosemary and Guy are coming home the mm-hmm. next night or, you know,
yeah.
shortly after.
Yeah.
And this woman's thrown herself from the apartment, killed
right.
herself.
Right.
So the Cassavetes come over and it's very sad. They comfort each other and
yeah.
then they get an immediate invitation to go to dinner.
Which, by the way, Ruth Gordon... In the previous episode with Margaret Meehan, and
yeah.
I did not recognize her.
Really?
I was like, who is that?
Yeah.
And then I knew Ruth Gordon was in this movie, but
yeah.
I did not. She was so made up. She's so much makeup on in her. Yeah. It's a wild look for her.
Yeah. So Ruth Gordon plays Minnie Cassavetes, which is married to Roman, and they're neighbors of Guy and Rosemary. Mm-hmm. And so, the walls, apparently, the walls are kind of paper thin, and they can hear them. And Ruth Gordon's character has a really screechy voice, and they're kind of giggling and mocking her, but like, she's going to hear it, you know? But they become sort of like, this like kind of pain in the ass neighbors that they're just so involved in their lives.
They're always knocking on the door, making them eat pudding. I just felt for her. So I was like,
it's sort of like, in the guise of hospitality being welcoming, but like Minnie is really nosy and she's asking the price of furniture.
Right.
And she's...
I forget the price that she said, but I was like, wow, I wouldn't pay that much for a sofa today. But then again, you have a husband who's a semi, like, successful actor.
Well, this is the other part of the plot, is that Guy is a struggling actor.
And how did they afford that apartment?
Very good point. Oh, well, he's got some commercials.
Okay.
So he's got like a Yamaha commercial that comes on TV. Okay. But he wants his big break.
Let me tell you, if you're living in New York, I'm imagining you got to have two people working.
Well, this would have been in the 60s, too. And so New York wouldn't have been so prohibitively expensive as it is
now. Nowadays, you're like, fuck, nobody can live. I think half the places in New York City are Airbnbs. Like, nobody's living there anymore because it's just so expensive.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
Well, you would never have access to, like, a three-bedroom, like, apartment.
It's a massive apartment.
Yeah, massive apartment with fireplaces
tall ceilings
and woodwork. And
the kitchen was in a whole separate room.
You're like,
that's not
good. Oh, no. Like, my friends in New York, like, very... Yeah. Like, one of my friends had a bathtub in his kitchen. No. Like, and it just, like, kept a plywood over top of it to use it for a table when he wasn't taking a bath, but like tiny little.
I think I saw some video where this one fellow was looking for a place and he really had to compromise, like, do I need a toilet in the apartment? And it was like a tough call because there was some good square footage, but like there was no toilet.
That doesn't seem legal.
I know, but like, what are you going to do?
So New York at a very different time. They have this beautiful apartment available to them.
Yeah. And I love Rosemary because she is like, she can see the decor coming together.
Yeah.
Like, she's invested.
She
wants
to be a good wife so badly. And she's so supportive. Mm-hmm. This is another thing to talk about. Just like the gender roles played out in 1968 among this. And you would think, like, progressive, artistic couple.
Mm-hmm.
But,
oh, man. And you know what, though? We say that. We're like, ha, 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 in the 1960s were so backwards. But that shit still plays out today.
I was very curious about that.
We can get into that. But, like, I don't think we're strangers to gender roles that we take on and domesticity.
Uh-huh.
You know, they're still permeating.
Yeah.
But, So,
like, next in the plot is that Guy Woodhouse, Rosemary's husband, becomes very interested in what Roman and Minnie, or it's like you can see them having little conversations in the other room, and Rosemary's not really privy to them, and Guy, all he'll say is like, Roman's really interesting, I'm going to go back over there tonight, and she's like, really? Because she's thinking they're an old fuddy-duddy couple.
Yeah.
And but you see, Guy just can't get enough. You see, he's kind of got hooked in. Mm-hmm. You realize what's happening is that Roman's telling him, we can throw spells on people. Mm-hmm. We can improve your career.
Right.
And what he does is one of Guy's rivals for a part.
Yeah.
Roman casts a spell on him and making him blind and therefore unable to complete the role.
Right.
So Guy has this windfall of being on Broadway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, Rosemary's suspicious, but she pretty much goes along with it because she gets pregnant. And it's just like, la, 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 la. Oh, joy. You know, and you can see that this is something that she's really wanted.
Yeah.
And so she's thrilled. I mean, Mia Farrow does such a great job.
Yeah, wonderful.
Because it is just like, you really get a sense that this woman is like, has her dream come true. She gets the call from the doctor.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh joy, my life is complete.
Yeah, to be a mother is like, yeah, exactly. Like she's fulfilling
her destiny.
Yeah. Now, she doesn't have any sense that they are satanic.
No.
In fact, that comes out so much later. But she does hear weird stuff next door.
And she gets that smelly
that's right.
talisman sort of.
Ruth Gordon. Thing. Yeah, Ruth Gordon gives her a charm that's like a little ball of filigree metal, but it's got an herb in the middle of it called tannis root. Mm-hmm. And it's got a pungent smell.
Is that an actual herb?
I don't know. I haven't done that research.
Well, they did get some satanic
consultation.
So maybe.
Yeah, I was reading that like Anton LaVey, the founder of the Church of Satan, was a consultant on the film.
Checks out.
I'm not sure. But like what we were saying is that like you don't really see any of their rituals. You see one ritual through Rosemary's perception she's drugged. So Guy and Rosemary are trying to conceive a child.
Yeah.
But Guy, you realize he's making a deal with the satanic cult next door to pimp out Rosemary's womb.
So
Minnie brings over some chocolate mousse that is drugged, and she doesn't really want to eat it because it's chalky, and a guy is yelling at her.
Treats her like a child.
Yeah, like, you need to finish your food because that woman worked on, slaved. How do you, you know?
Yeah.
But she only eats half of it. Mm-hmm. So later in the evening, when they assume that she's fully roofied on the chocolate mouse.
Is that why she had the, like, she
She comes in and out of consciousness.
Yeah.
She's dreaming, but she's weaving in reality.
I see.
So she's laid out in this on this ritual table.
Yeah.
And all of these old people, all of these neighbors are gathered around her in the nude.
Mm-hmm.
But she's kind of like, coming in and out and going like, what's... Yeah, she says, this is not a dream. This is really happening. And Guy says to Ruth Gordon, like, can she see? And Ruth Gordon's like, if she ate the mousse or the mouse, she calls it the chocolate mouse. She's like, if she ate it, she can't see nor hear. She's dead. She's dead. Yeah. But she hadn't consumed the full dose.
Okay, that's just hitting me. Okay.
And she's raped by the devil in this ceremony. Yeah. And Guy fucking lets it happen. And like, and after it happens too, he's making all these excuses, but he won't look at her. Like, he's done something. His conscience is bothering him.
And she knows, she observes that he can't look at her.
Uh-huh.
And she's a very beautiful woman. And so it is weird not to look at her during this movie.
Right.
It's like, wow.
But he can't make eye contact with her. And she's like, Guy, do we need to talk about this? And he's like, and he's totally gaslighting her, saying, oh, nothing's wrong. But you know, what's interesting too, I don't know if you saw this parallel, but a lot of times when women get pregnant, their husbands or partners are kind of intimidated and a little afraid of their body is like strange. They don't know if they're going to hurt the baby or like the Madonna whore complex. It's like, there's just a different perception of women.
I went to a baby shower today. And
not satanic.
Not satanic. Shower. But I'll tell you what, that future dad wanted to get shit-faced. And I was like...
Oh, is this their first child?
Their first child.
Okay.
And I'm like, he is a lovely person. But I was like, you are nervous as fuck right now. And he has all the support and... all of that. So he really doesn't have a lot of reasons to be terribly nervous. But, you know, I mean, it is this huge thing. I mean, I can see how it would be maybe a little intimidating. And I know that sometimes men they can feel like labor pains or they can have...
Like sympathetic weight.
Yes.
Men can even lactate. Did you know that?
Well, we talked about that.
He's like, yeah, check this out.
I think, Hyde, you mentioned that you hadn't lactated at one point.
Not yet.
Not yet.
But I'm not giving up. I'm in my prime.
I think I think I'll remain dry on that one.
But, I probably will lactate before you do.
It is wild, the like how babies can change so much. And she even, in the movie, Rosemary says, like, we need this to be full communication. Like,
yeah.
Which is ironic because, like, he is totally lying to her.
Motherfucker.
But it's really hard to watch. And so.
Yes.
She gets a haircut.
Oh, which yeah.
I love.
And she's like, I've been to Vidal Sassoon. And he goes, I hope you didn't pay for that.
Oh, my God. So
awful. That's the worst mistake you've ever made, Rosemary.
Yeah. And then she has a party.
Has
a party.
Yeah, in revolt of guy spending all of his time over at the Cassavetes. Mm-hmm. She's like, we're having a party, guy.
Yeah.
And it's a very special party. Mm-hmm. You have to be under 60 years old to go there.
Well, hi, you could go.
I could still go.
You're 14, 15. For those of our listeners who don't know, Hyde is a leap year baby. So he's only
14.
So he's so young.
I've only had 14 birthdays, but I'm actually 58.
Yeah, but you can still go under 60.
Yeah. That's another thing that's kind of cultish and controlling is that Guy's not letting her have contact with a lot of her friends. And she's like, we're going to have a party and it's going to be all of our old friends. And that makes Guy super nervous.
And he hates she wants to go back to her old doctor when she's seeing this other doctor that she thinks
Zaperstein.
Is super shady.
Yeah.
And
So she has this youngish, cute, pediatrician, what do you call a doctor that's seeing you while you're pregnant?
I'm going to say gynecologist, but that's not right.
Oh, well, maybe like her maternity doctor, her lady doctor, I don't know. Anyway, she's seeing a doctor since she's pregnant.
Yeah.
And he's played by, Charles Grodin.
Okay.
He's really cute, you know? But then the satanic cult, the Cassavetes, are trying to control every aspect of Rosemary's life. Mm-hmm. And they're trying to, and she's kind of pliable. Mm-hmm. And she's, what do you call it? Like she's a good daughter. She's acquiescent. Yeah. She's obedient.
Yes. Yeah.
And that's part of the Catholic training too, is that like it makes it so that other groups can manipulate you because you don't want to be rude, you don't want to offend anybody. So she's having horrible pain.
Yes.
And she looks terrible. Mm-hmm. And she's losing weight. Mm-hmm. And Dr. Zaperstein, who is also a Satanist, we find out, is the doctor, the society doctor that the Cassavetes have introduced her to. So it's like, you don't want to go to that doctor. You want to go to this doctor because he's the best and he's going to give you the family rate and all this.
What I love about that whole thing is that they're pushing on this, like, it's all natural. We're going to give you none of that artificial vitamin stuff.
Yes. Because,
holistic.
In keeping with the witch theme, and is that Minnie has an herbal garden in her kitchen, and that's where the tannis root is coming from. But I guess herbalism was even seen at that time as like, well, this is kind of witchy and questionable and maybe black magic-y. Because like in the 60s, that's when people were feeding babies baby formula. And like, science and progress.
Oh.
And they weren't adhering to the old ways
so
much.
We don't want homegrown food. We want our TV dinners.
Exactly. Convenience.
Frozen. Yeah. I mean, the food was terrible from what I understand.
Yeah.
Pretty garbage stuff. But yeah, it's like the reliance on science and technology permeated.
Yeah.
Everything.
And I guess you had counterculture, like hippies who were having babies at home in 1968.
You know what? Okay, and this is probably like rude of me, but every time I meet somebody who's pregnant, I'm like, tell me your birth plan because I want to know. I'm just so curious of the decisions that they make.
That's like, not rude, is it?
I don't know, but I'm very nosy. And I also want to know if you plan on circumcising your child because I feel like that's very cruel.
I do
too. And I'll try to tell you why. But so that might be a little rude. But like, I'm like, are you? What are you gonna do with the placenta? Are you gonna eat it? What are you gonna do with it? Like, I just want to know because I'm never gonna do it. So I'm so curious.
See, I'm surprised that you're actually curious about any aspects of reproduction.
I think it just because I know it's not something I'm gonna do, and I just want to know why. And like, I don't know. It's fascinating to me.
I feel like people that are having babies are probably very excited to talk about that stuff.
They probably are. And I'm so excited to listen. Like, I watch documentary, and it's only the weird stuff that I love. I'm like, tell me how you're going to make a placenta smoothie, because I'm so curious.
Well, and I guess, like, there's stem cells in placenta?
Yeah.
Well, or the cord? What's the cord?
Oh, the umbilical cord?
Yeah.
The placenta is actually fascinating. Like, I don't know why I get into this, but it's like our first mother. It was there in our womb providing nutrients and like,
well, and I didn't know about this, okay. But my friend Allison, who's had two kids, told me. She's like, yeah, you have the baby and you're pushing and the baby's out and you think, oh, that's done. And they're like, no, you have to push the placenta out now. And she said that's
I did not know. I thought they just I didn't know this either. I remember seeing a placenta, like an image of one, and I was like, the fuck is that?
Is it like a jellyfish?
It's like a thing. It's like
a stomach. It
looks like an organ. Yeah. Like, it's insane.
It's your baby bag.
Yeah. And so in some cultures, there is ritual and ceremony involved in the placenta. Like, there's an honor to the placenta because it is this thing that it is your first, like, thing that protects you. Here in America, I think it's illegal to like acquire your placenta. Like, they consider it like medical waste.
Yep.
And so it's really frustrating because some people from other cultures don't think of it that way.
You know, this is interesting in terms of medical waste. I wanted to say,
I love that we're talking about medical waste.
I know. Well, there's an artist, R.E. Cox, in Dallas. Dallas-based artist. And he had an accident when he was like 19 or 20, where it created a lot of health problems for him. Mm-hmm. And he was somewhat crippled. Like, his pelvis was, he had a great fall. Uh-huh. And I know so much about Ari because we're friends, but mm-hmm. also because learning about his work and curating him into a show.
I remember that show.
And he does so much work around his continuing, like, health issues. Mm-hmm. And so, he's dealt with, like, I don't even know how to define this, but he's had a lot of infections and a lot of like mobility issues, mm-hmm. and for like now 30 years, mm-hmm. and he a couple of years ago he had to get his leg amputated.
Oh, geez.
It was becoming such a problem that it was like, it's better if we just take this leg off.
Yeah.
And because he does so much work around his body, he wanted to have a funeral for his leg.
Yeah, that's fair.
But the medical complex or what have you wouldn't allow him to have his leg.
His own
they
leg.
Had to dispose of it in a specific way.
Wow.
So he was going to make art with that way. It's like, I'm going to bury a part of myself, but it just didn't work out.
That's so frustrating.
Yeah.
Well, we haven't finished the summary. I don't know if you want to spoil the ending
Okay. Stop now. Go watch Rosemary's Baby.
Because it is free on Amazon, everyone. So if you have an Amazon account, then it is free. Or if you use your sister's Amazon account, it is free.
So, yeah, I mean, this is a wonderful film. And I have to say, I recommend it because I still love watching it.
It was wonderful.
Yeah.
I was hooked the first 5 minutes. I'm like, you had me at apartment remodel.
Right?
This is great.
You know,
it was slow build. Like, the tension just like...
Yeah.
Just grew, grew.
Well, this is something... Grew. Yeah. So this is something that Ira Levin said about writing a horror film with maternity as like a major element, is that he noticed that in building tension, that like you experience tension before you see the monster.
Yes.
And he said, what if there's a device like gestation period of 9 months where you don't get to see this monster? Mm-hmm. And in fact, you never see it. Mm-hmm. But
only the, you see the eyes, but they were Satan's eyes. So there's like, you know, there's, but yeah, you never see the baby in the end.
Right.
Which I think was a good call. Because I don't know. I
it's feel like better it in your imagination.
It could have been totally awful.
Well, remember Boogie Nights? Did you ever see this?
I remember watching.
It's Paul Thomas Anderson's like kind of fictitious.
Wait, this was, oh, this is the big, yeah, like, okay.
Fictitious biopic of following John Holmes.
Yes.
And Marky Mark Wahlberg plays John Holmes' character, who's Dirk Diggler.
Okay.
But like,
did
you're hearing about his dick through the whole movie. Everybody's like, eyes light up, and they're just like, wow, look at that. You never see it. And then at the end of the film, he pulls out this rubber sausage prosthetic, and it's kind of really uneventful.
Oh, no.
And you're like, you didn't need to show that.
Yeah.
Yeah, so...
I got you, yeah.
Yeah, for all you dick pic enthusiasts out there, like, maybe it's better that
mystery.
You just, like...
Yeah, totally.
You know, that is... Okay, while we're, like, off-branching, because we do this all the time, like, that is interesting, right? Uh-huh. That, like, people are so wanting to see sexy pics, but, like, how... It's a stand-in. It's a prosthetic.
Yeah.
It's a prosthetic. It's a, what, proxy?
Yeah.
Like...
I think that sexy pictures, nudie pictures, they're fine, but like, I think that we're so self-conscious that when I have done this myself, because everybody's doing this, right?
Everyone's like, Googling Aaron Stafford nudes right now.
No. The light, the angle.
Oh, totally.
Posing, and it's just, it's not... You know,
all of the plastic surgery you've had.
All of it. Thinking about it. And it's like the build, like the production of this is a lot. And it's like, it kind of, it's not like the mood that you would like to think of as being spontaneous.
Right.
And, you
and
know.
It, and it has so little to do with like when you're actually with someone.
Yeah.
And how you experience them is not supposed to be a magazine layout.
I'll tell you what. I was with a girlfriend several years ago, and she got a dick pic sent to her in the morning from some rando guy that she had met. And it's like, A, that's not impressive. And B, nobody asked for it. Like, why are you doing that, you stupid man?
I think guys should just send each other their dicks.
And it was flaccid. And I'm like, I don't know how you thought this was going to go, but like a flaccid penis. I still think it's going to impress too many people.
Did it come with the sound effect of like, wah, wah, wah.
We made that ourselves. So, but it's a little, it's so artificial.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Oh, so I wanted to go back to Rosemary's Baby.
Yes.
When you're talking about how you get kind of excited about they're moving into this apartment.
Yeah.
And Rosemary recognizes the potential in this place.
Yeah.
And she's painting all the woodwork.
Yes.
And it's really bright and cheery. Mm-hmm. And like, and she's really invested in making a home with Guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And
totally.
Part of that is starting a family. Mm-hmm. But... it is interesting because I've made work about this too, about like when you're nesting and what it means to try to manifest a beautiful home life by making a beautiful home.
Mm-hmm.
And it's what's funny is like Rosemary's very successful in making a beautiful home, but her husband's fucking lying to her and
asshole.
Pimping her out to the Church of Satan and like... he won't look at her or really touch her. Like, you see her in bed coming up with baby names, and he's on the other side of the bed and not touch her.
He knows it's not really his baby.
Right.
And then when she does finally feel a kick, he's like, ugh. And it's like, girl.
And John Cassavetes is fantastic.
Although,
in this film.
I heard he was difficult because he's an improviser.
Uh-huh.
And so he kept wanting to improvise. And you have the director who's not comfortable with that. And so there was a little... in fact, this is something I found out today that my jaw dropped. So... and I think I knew Mia Farrow was married to...
oh! Frank Sinatra.
And so he wanted her to be in his movie during this time. Did you know about this?
No.
Fuck. Okay. So he's
making he didn't want her to do Rosemary's Baby.
He was like, do my movie. You shouldn't be in this one. She was like, I think I can do both. And so it ended up, this movie was taking a little bit longer to make. And so Frank Sinatra realized, like, it wasn't going to work with Mia Farrow. And so he basically sends her divorce papers while she's making this movie.
And this is another thing. I think when they marry, that, like, Rosemary, Mia Farrow is 21 and he's, like, 50.
Yeah.
And, yeah. So we'll get to that age discrepancy later, too, is that... So, do you know what film Frank Sinatra was in that he was trying to get her to be in?
I think it's called something like The Detective. It wasn't a good movie. It wasn't anything of this caliber.
Well, I'd read that she was a soap actress, and she was on a series called Peyton Place. Oh. And he made her drop out of that. So, he was, again, in her real life, she was with a man that was very controlling and kind of used her... Maybe like a pawn.
It mirrors the movie in a really uncomfortable way.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, God. I was so angry at Guy.
Yeah.
Which is such an appropriate name.
I know. Unless his name could have been Bro Woodhouse.
He was such an asshole. I mean, he hated her new haircut, which, by the way... I was like, you know, the thing about hair and women is, like, it's a big deal.
Uh-huh.
As a woman, if you've ever had a bad haircut, like, you just want to die.
Yeah.
And so, for him to, like, say, ugh, I don't like it, it's just like, fuck off, dude.
Yeah, he's like, so shitty.
He's such a jerk. And then, after they have their party with the young folks... The young old folks. Yeah. And then they're older from the past. And then, you know, he's yelling at her. She wants to go see the doctor that she felt comfortable with before. And he's like, I'm not going to pay for that. And finally, she's just like.
But it's not about him paying for it. It's about him keeping the secret. It's like, if she gets an ultrasound and sees this hooved baby.
Funny part in that party scene is that she finally confides to her little posse of friends, her girlfriends, like, I've been in a lot of pain and I'm not feeling well, and it's not the pregnancy that she was dreaming of, for sure.
Right.
You know, it's like,
are you having a boy or girl? A devil.
And it's like, you know, she finally, then she says something like, she doesn't want to get a second opinion because she's worried that they'll push her to have an abortion.
Yes, yes. She breaks down with her girlfriends and she's like, I won't have an abortion. They're like, nobody said that.
Yeah.
Just get checked out. You shouldn't be in pain.
Let's imagine there is an alternative ending. She goes to a completely, let's go to a woman doctor. Why not? Uh-huh. You know, if we're making stuff up.
Yeah.
And this woman doctor's like, girlfriend, you've got a devil in your baby. Do you think Rosemary would have had an abortion?
Right.
I think I would.
Well, okay. So Ira Levin, the author of the book, said that when he was talking to his publishers about the book, they were a little bit worried about what it would mean for the baby to be born and what kind of panic that would send, even in a fictitious world.
Oh, my God.
And this editor suggested that Ira Levin have Rosemary be, like, run over by a cab so that she can't have the baby. But then Ira Levin said, well, actually, at that time in the 60s, like, editors, like, respected writers enough not to be too directive with their critiques and suggestions, you know.
Ooh. Well, but that's like, different.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you're going to be accused of homicide for getting an abortion, this is sad, but I think this is going to have it. There will be a rise in suicide.
Okay. So this is something I found out recently, which is why the Conservative Party Republicans have pushed this anti-abortion agenda.
Uh-huh.
Do you know when that started, Hyde?
I don't.
Okay. So it started in the 60s, 70s.
Okay.
And I'm like, well, obviously this is about women.
Uh-huh.
And not really about babies.
Uh-huh. Right.
But like,
oh my God, yeah.
But also from, this is something that I, this is, my boyfriend told me this, so grain of salt here, but I think this is true. This sounds true. But he said that he heard that because conservatives, their main platform was segregation in schools, which
yes.
was they were kind of losing that, like, mm-hmm. and so they're like, well, we got to adopt something else to get people to rally behind,
wow.
you know, and abortion was kind of the...
So it's always political. It wasn't at all
about
babies.
No. I mean,
it's about
like
controlling
control,
and,
I mean,
and having political power
on so many levels. Yeah. So yeah. that sucks. But yeah, I mean, it, and it is, I've met so many people who are like, I don't like the Republican Party, but I am not for abortion. And I'm like, that's it for them.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
I mean, they really picked an unfortunate winner with
yeah.
their platform because it sells,
mm-hmm,
you know,
mm-hmm.
and I swear to God, you know, I drive a lot for work and it's like, I see those billboards. I'm sure you saw, and you'll
mm-hmm.
see more of them,
yeah.
you know, when you're driving up to Canada where it's like, you know, heartbeat and,
uh-huh.
you know,
Missouri has some really extra offensive billboards. I remember
we used to have, when I went to North Texas, we had, it was so God awful every week. Every year, and they have these giant billboards. They're vertical, I suppose.
Oh.
They're like big triangular things.
Okay.
And they would have images of like dead fetuses and shit. And
uh-huh.
it was this very anti-abortion campaign
uh-huh.
on campus. And I was actually taking women's studies at the time,
uh-huh.
and we went to go visit to talk about how fucked up it was.
Uh-huh.
And I remember thinking, I was like, what if this, a poor young student
yeah.
had just had an abortion and then this is
yeah.
what she sees that day? And
yeah.
it's like,
that's not going to make Christians in quotation marks
no.
Feel one iota of empathy mm-hmm. or sadness. It's like they'll, I mean, it's all about punishment. It's a culture of punishment.
And the thing that I didn't recognize, but that the professor informed us, is like a lot of the images were not correct, like the statistics and the
depictions.
I love on some
alternative facts,
yeah, on social media you've got these images and they're like, you know, what do you think about these fetuses, and it shows them some fetuses.
Oh right,
like, well, they should be saved. It's like, well, one's a dog and one's an elephant, so like, okay, you know.
Yeah. Right,
it's infuriating.
Yeah.
What, okay, so let me look at my notes here, because I've got so many. I wanted to talk about, okay, so I feel like this movie can be seen in a couple different ways.
Yeah.
Like you could, okay, so like, I think we could see it as this like anti-patriarchy,
mm-hmm.
you know, and sort of like see it from that angle,
mm-hmm.
but I also think there's like this other weird messaging that happens where it's like very traditional, like we were saying, like
uh-huh.
gender norms.
Uh-huh.
And it's like, I wonder if there are these, just these different interpretations that
uh-huh.
one could, and I suppose that's what art does. It
uh-huh.
opens the doors for interpretations. But this one to me, I'm like, I focused on like how the husband was treating her
yeah.
and her trying to gain her independence
mm-hmm.
with her haircut. And I'm like, that to me, when a woman gets her hair cut short like that, I'm like, she wants a new start. It's a new
yeah.
beginning.
Yeah.
She's just gone through a breakup.
Uh-huh.
I did the same thing. Like, I'm like, cut it off.
Uh-huh.
You know? And so it's like these acts of independence, and she keeps
yeah.
getting suppressed. And then that awful scene where she finally goes to the other doctor.
Uh-huh.
He's like, oh, you know, don't worry, everything's fine. And
yeah.
he ends up calling her husband. And
right.
like, oh, fuck.
So what Aaron is talking about
yeah.
is that, like, Rosemary's been seeing Dr. Zapperstein,
mm-hmm.
who is a Satanist
mm-hmm.
and is in league with the Satanist
mm-hmm.
and is and is telling her to just ignore her pain and it'll go away. Her health is really failing. Yeah. And so finally she just gets enough and she recognizes that he's in league with them.
Yeah.
And she says, I'm going to run back to my first doctor. Mm-hmm. And she confesses everything to him and she brings a couple of books and she's like, this is what they're doing. And they sacrifice babies and you have to protect me and I need to go to the hospital and have this baby and keep this baby safe. And he's like, okay, just calm down here and take a nap.
She finally gets to take a nap.
Yeah, and you're just so relieved for her. And it's summer, and she's like this little frail, tiny.
She looks like a figure from an Edvard Munch painting.
Yeah.
She's just so pale, and it's just poor.
And he turns the air conditioner on for her. Uh-huh. She's taking a nap. Mm-hmm. And you're like, oh my God, finally, somebody's going to believe her and protect her. And then he wakes her up, and he enters into the room, her old doctor and her husband, who basically kidnap her and take her back home.
Oh, and
it's heartbreaking.
Up. Yeah. And I think I really feel for Rosemary as a Southern woman because we are raised to be submissive.
Yep.
And it's like, I know how that feels where you don't want to ruffle the feathers.
Yeah.
Like, I think you would think she would just run, like get away. But here she is. She's just walking with them. Yeah. Now, she does try to. She kind of creates a diversion. She tries to get away from them in the apartment.
Yeah.
And she's unsuccessful, but...
But you see her spirit still there. She's like, I'm going to protect this baby.
And she did finally lash out at that party or after the party where she's like, you know, why don't you care about me and not like all these other people that you just fucking met?
Uh-huh.
So it's there, but it's like she's... Throughout the movie, there's just so many moments where she's just like, okay, like, you know, she's very polite and accommodating. And I get it. Like, it's so hard as a woman sometimes. Like, I think that's why I don't think men understand. They're like, well, you know, why wouldn't a woman want me to ask her out? And it's just like, sometimes it's scary to say no.
Yeah.
You know? And sometimes certain environments aren't appropriate, but like, you do it anyway. Uh-huh. And... So it's like, that's how a lot of women navigate the world in fear, and they're afraid to upset somebody because you don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah. No, so. I know when I'm talking to my female friends, I recognize almost daily how much I take for granted as a man, that like my safety, my position, and that's as a queer man too, you know?
You know, it's funny. I've noticed that I think I'm attracted to men who are more petite. I mean, my boyfriend is like, we're almost the same size almost.
Yeah.
And not to say that, you know, somebody who's larger is going to be an asshole, but there's something about a difference in size that's really scary.
Yeah.
You know, so I think it's a mental, like, subconscious thing.
Feeling safe, like feeling like somebody could overpower you.
Yeah, because it's like you would think you would want a partner who could protect you, but sometimes you want to know that you still are able to,
exit if you need to. And considering like this film and that like Guy should be protecting Rosemary, but he is her number one threat because he is letting everybody else take advantage of her, exploit her, and maybe even kill her. Who knows, you know?
I'm really drawn to this idea of seeing these multiple perspectives. Like, I'm fascinated with pornography. I mean, obviously it's fascinating, but like as a feminist, you can see it from two different angles. You can see it as a celebration of sexuality and independence. Mm-hmm. But then on the other side, you can see it for being objectifying and sometimes being harmful. So it's like, how are we supposed to engage with this? And there are some ways that we can like make sure that we're engaging in pornography that's consensual. But it's a lot of work.
Right, you know? Right,
like it's
right.
another step that you're going to have to do to get off. So it's I just think it's fascinating that comes
but
out.
It's true. It's like ethical pornography because like we're kind of past the myth that all pornography is exploitive because some of it could. I mean, I still hold that pornography has so much potential as an art form, and it's just not really not seized. That. Yeah. So, like, talking about I wanted to mention that I feel like in 1968, when they're making this film, and they think, I think Roman Polanski, maybe, I don't know, is thinking the devil is the great terror in this film.
Okay.
And for me, watching this film, it's always been the conspiracy around, like, I'm not terrified of the devil. I mean, I'm not excited to meet him necessarily, but what is terrifying is that everyone close to Rosemary is using her in this way, and she has no safety.
Yeah, that's true. It does. I mean, you really feel for, I guess the movie is framed in that way. It's always from her perspective, or there's a lot of like clever framing devices where it's like we're always seeing things as if we are, or like it's very close up on her, so we're getting a lot of her emotions.
Yeah. It's masterful.
It's very good.
I love the way this film is paced and photographed and acted. I mean, it is like the ensemble cast is amazing. Mm-hmm. Ruth Gordon actually won an Oscar, you know.
Did she really?
For Best Supporting Actress in this role. And so Erin had mentioned when we had an episode with Margaret Meehan as our guest artist, we chose the film Harold and Maude, which is Ruth Gordon's film as well.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's so fun to see her in a different role.
Oh, totally.
And, you know, okay, so I don't know if we're at the place yet where we talk about Roman Polanski as a problematic figure.
Yeah. I had to look that up because I had forgotten exactly his situation.
Yeah, I kind of known bits and pieces and things that you hear, but then I started reading about it last night, and it just made me so sad because I was like, he exploited a teenager.
Mm-hmm.
He raped a teenager.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she was very clear that she didn't want to engage with him like this.
Mm-hmm.
And he did things to her anyway. And he plied her with alcohol and with drugs, with Quaaludes. And her mother delivered her to the scene, which was Jack Nicholson's house.
Oh, my God.
Jack Nicholson. Roman Polanski was staying at Jack Nicholson's house, and he was away doing something.
Uh-huh.
But Roman Polanski, like, the scenario was that he wanted to photograph her for, I think, French Vogue. And she's 13 years old, and Roman Polanski is 43.
Is he married to Sharon Tate?
He's not. This is in 77. So he has, at this point, his wife, Sharon Tate, who is a star of Fearless Vampire Killers, his film that he made maybe right before Rosemary's Baby. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was, actually. So, actually, Rosemary's Baby was Polanski's first American film. Like, he made a film right before that was a British production called Fearless Vampire Killers, which is also, like, a film I love.
Mm-hmm.
And Sharon Tate's in it, and she's lovely.
Mm-hmm.
And if anybody does not know this, she was murdered by the Manson family.
Infamously,
while she was pregnant. And so, weren't you mentioning that there's some, like, curses around this film, or like people just think there's like a natural retribution for dancing with the devil.
It does sort of, I mean, obviously, like baby killer.
Yeah, I mean, it's eerie how much it lines up.
Something else, I think that, the fact that John Lennon was killed in front of the building.
Yes, at the Dakota, at the site of the film.
Yeah, I think there's something else that happened. You're like,
location of the film.
Yeah, it's funny. It kind of just reminded me. There's this film, this awful film that was made with very famous actors, since Arabian Nights kind of thing in the 1950s, and they're in this sort of desert environment in Nevada or something. And they thought the film was cursed because everybody was getting really sick. But it turns out it was like nuclear testing.
I know this. Okay, so I think that's why John Wayne died of cancer.
Yes.
And it was a film about Genghis Khan.
Yes, yes, yes. That's exactly right. I got some of the details right. But yeah, it's like, no, that was just a... And it's probably just a...
That's nuclear waste.
And I think that they had done... Somebody had said that there had been testing done, but it wasn't really done, so
right, or it wasn't accurate. Yeah.
So everybody got
so I guess
sick.
That it was the Mojave Desert, and it was the site of
you
nuclear
know more about
testing.
This than I do.
Maybe
yeah,
I
okay.
don't know.
Yeah,
I might have it wrong too, but yeah,
cursed,
not a curse. Just nuclear poison.
Cursed it away, I suppose. But yeah, no, so this one just seems more like coincidence, but and obviously now Roman Polanski is in France, I guess.
Yeah. So he is of French and Polish extraction, mm-hmm. and he will not come back to the U.S. because he will be tried for this crime. Yeah. Even his victim, I'm not remembering her name right now, but I read that like she sort of found a way to forgive him, okay. and she would like to wrap this up. Like she doesn't, you know, of course.
He doesn't want to face prison time.
Right. And he's in his 80s now, maybe.
Oh, I don't know.
But, so something I was reading about when he was questioned years later about why he won't go back. And he doesn't want to be tried. And he's saying, like, you know, let's just face it. I want to fuck young girls. The judge wants to fuck young girls. Wow. You want to fuck young girls. And so the idea that he has no remorse or no remorse at the time for that makes him seem a bit like a sociopath and also a pedophile. Because if your assumption is that, like, that's a completely normal thing to want to have sex with children and to want to drug children and force them into sexual situations.
Yeah.
In no way is that a consensual scenario. And so as much as I love this film and love Polanski's work, it is really, it does color the work.
Yeah.
And it's hard to watch it. And I don't watch it in the same way.
I mean, in this movie, there's a scene where Rosemary gets drugged and raped.
Right?
And she is disturbed by this when she realizes it, and then her husband, who's playing it off like he raped her, which I guess makes it better than Satan, but not by much.
Yeah.
And of course, I'm assuming that this is a time when it was legal for husbands to rape their wives. I know that was still a thing probably in the 60s.
Right. It was like a marital rights, I think they call
gross.
It. But you know, okay, so he's not the first film director or artist to do this.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we even look at Balthus as a painter,
mm-hmm.
like his work where his subject are pre-pubescent girls.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, are you familiar with his work somewhat?
I know a similar case with Sheila.
Egon Sheila.
Egon Sheila, yes. And
right.
So he was in prison.
He was in prison for like corrupting the youth, I believe. Because he had, like, young, maybe prostitutes modeling for him.
His depictions are, you know, a little racy at times. I mean, they're definitely, like, provocative.
Yeah.
For sure.
Well, this is the thing about, like, Balthus's work, too, is that it's definitely erotic.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know if you know the painting, The Guitar Lesson, where it's these two girls. Right?
Yes.
Isn't that? I mean, but
that is insane. Because it
is,
like,
a fascinating image. And
it still probably gets people upset today.
Yeah. I love his work. And I'm not saying cancel it or censor it. But it does bring to mind, like, is this a pressure valve that you're letting out?
Right.
Or is this, like, a desire you're confessing? Because also, like, I mean, I don't want to get sued, but say there are these scenes in Tarantino's films where women are being, their movement is being restricted, and their feet kind of play a major role in, like, say Kill Bill, like, Uma Thurman is she can move her feet and or her toes, and that's like, and anyway, like, you see that throughout his body of work too.
Yeah.
Incapacitated women who are maybe being sexually threatened, who and then their feet are like an erotic appendage.
Yeah.
And you know, look at Woody Allen, like, who made Manhattan about having a relationship with a teenage
girl
when you're a full grown man.
And he was very well known for depicting that kind of relationship in a lot of his movies too.
Yeah.
So it's not the only time he did that. But
so with Polanski treating this teenage girl like this, I'm thinking, like, this isn't the first time Polanski has mistreated a girl or a woman, you know? So,
well, and I think that it's so hard because it's like, this happens in the art world. I mean, I'm thinking like Chuck Close.
Yes!
This is a recent, and then even, you know, some curators here in Dallas, or a curator in Dallas, who have gotten in trouble. And it's hard to separate, and I don't think you really can separate the misdeeds with the work, I think that they become mm-hmm. infused and they become a part of the layer in the way that Roman Polanski, his tendencies, you know, become a part of this movie.
I mean,
the guy mentioned, the husband mentions necrophilia.
Yes.
Ew. And it's just like, and poor, you know,
and that may have come from, that may have come from the novel, or it may not.
Right.
Actually, Ira Levin says that this is the most faithful adaptation of a book ever. And he thinks it was because it was Polanski's first American film, and he maybe thought that he had to adhere to it. Because he said there are whole pages of dialogue that are in the film.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But then again, like, why is he drawn to this movie? Like, I mean, there's a lot that works as an artist. You're working subconsciously. You know, we talked about, we went to the museums yesterday, and it's like, poor, you know, somebody like Georgia O'Keeffe couldn't see, you know. Like,
she always denies sexual imagery in her work.
Yeah, and it's like, it's got to be there. But it's so, sometimes artists don't even know what they're doing, you know, conceptually. Like, there's that, like, it's so deep, it's so suppressed, but it's there if you want to look for it. But, and I've not seen a lot of Roman Polanski movies. What's the one, The Cul-de-Sac? Have you seen that one?
Is
that a good one?
Yeah, yeah.
I kind of want to see that one. Yeah. I just like the title.
Right.
But, yeah, I mean, it's like, do we, at what point do we stop engaging with their work? And with directors, like, there's a whole history of mistreatment towards actors.
Oh, right, with Hitchcock.
Hitchcock is a great example, and we talked about...
Kubrick. Stanley Kubrick.
Yeah. I mean, so...
Oh, right, that he kind of tortured Shelley Duvall to get those performances out of her during...
The Shining.
The Shining,
So there's a history of this. I mean, your name is director. Like, you are in control. So, like, you kind of get to have your way. And I think that it's something that some people are drawn to because of that, perhaps. An artist, I think, I mean, you know this as somebody who uses models in your studio practice. Yeah. Like, there is, I think sometimes artists can kind of, like, take advantage of that opportunity. Chuck Close, you know, for example.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, it's, I don't know. I mean, like, some people have said that they're not going to listen to Michael Jackson anymore. And it's just like, can we completely separate?
I don't think it's black and white image,
it's
really.
I mean, we can discuss it.
Or black and white issue,
We can talk about how it's related. I don't think we have to ignore it, but I don't think we have to toss it either. You know?
Well, people are really complicated. And, like, I think we're all living in fear a little bit about being canceled. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, if you make an off-color joke, if you date somebody young who doesn't have a sense of humor and, like, can't hang with a baby boomer, you know, that happens. But no, like, I think we have to exercise judgment. We have to make sure that, like, people are protected. Yeah. You know, like, we don't, like, I don't want to introduce someone to a predator. Yeah. Like, I have that much conscientiousness. Mm-hmm. But I also, I don't want to ruin people's lives by assuming the worst because we're all complex people.
Yeah.
And we all struggle with ethical, moral issues.
The thing about some of this too, and not to defend a lot of these acts, is that if you think about a lot of the previous experiences that these people have as children, they were also abused and suffered. Yeah. And, you know, this trauma just keeps, you know, continuing. And so it's not like they were born this way, you know. So I'm always thinking about that, you know. I'm always trying to kind of making sure that I'm like, I'm not perfect either. I'm not a saint. I don't pretend to be.
But I trust that, you know. It's like, it's these holier than thou figures who want to be infallible and want to control other people's moral lives. And, or, you know,
I want to ask you, Hyde, about the ending of this movie. How did you feel about it? Because I found this ending perplexing.
Yeah, same.
What are your thoughts on the ending?
So, Rosemary has, when she's brought back to the apartment, she's she's drugged again and again and again because they're just trying to subdue her. Mm-hmm. And so she delivers the baby and she's unconscious of it. Mm-hmm. So she wakes up and they're like, yeah, the baby's fine.
Yeah.
And then they come back and they're like, the baby's dead. And they're keeping her drugged up, but she starts saving her sedatives and not taking them, like putting them under her tongue and sliding them into the bed.
And then she hears the baby crying or something. So she's like,
and she gets up and she starts, they think that she's been taking her medicine. So she's subdued.
Yeah.
But she goes into the Cassavetes apartment and she sees a crib festooned in black and all of these people
with an upside down cross.
Yeah, a silver crucifix hanging above the bed that's upside down.
Yeah.
And and so all these people are kind of gathered around. It's sort of like a social club or like a funeral or something.
Yeah.
Like just old people socializing day in, day out because the Son of Satan's been born.
Wow.
And they're really, and they call it like, oh yeah, like there's that New Year's party and they make a toast and they're like 1966 year one.
Uh-huh.
So it's like our sense of,
So then Rosemary's totally freaked the fuck out.
Yeah. She approaches this crib and she sees this baby with like yellow eyes with like vertical irises, like a goat, and she's like, what have you done to its eyes? What have you done to him? And they're like, we've done nothing. He's got his father's eyes. And she's like, guy's eyes are blue. And she's like, guy's not a father. And like guy's like looking down and won't look at her. And you know, and that's when she finds out she's been impregnated by Satan. And that's what all, I mean, it's got to, like, you just flip smooth out. Knowing all this, there's no way, but she starts to like rock the crib eventually. Like she's encouraged to be his mother.
Yeah.
So I think that might be setting you up for a sequel.
Oh.
Is why she...
She takes on the...
Yeah, you see her expression change and she can extend some tenderness to this child because it's like, it's not the child's fault. Like, all these people have done this thing and conspired against her, but the reality is there's this baby.
Yeah.
And it's her baby.
It's so interesting because this story, I think I mentioned to this earlier, in a way mirrors the, you know, Mary, Jesus, God.
Right. Situation. God impregnates Mary
against
a young virgin.
She did not consent to this.
Yeah.
You know, she was, what, 12 or 13 or something?
That ever happened, but yes.
Yeah, according to the old Bible.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and I would call that a rape. That's what I'm going to call rape.
Right? Yeah. Well, incubus, succubus, like the idea that spirits can have sex with humans.
Did Joseph get really famous after Jesus was born?
Right. Did he make a deal? Well, we're talking about him today, so he got something, right?
Yeah, right. I know. Yeah. He was immortalized. He's probably in a lot of paintings.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's like, and again, I'm kind of going back to like my feminism, you know, lens here, but it's like, is she then accepting her motherly role in the way that Mary did? And her name, of course, Mary, Rosemary.
Yeah.
And,
oh my God. I didn't think about that.
And Rose is the symbol for Mary in the Catholic.
You're right. Oh my God.
It's almost too on the nose. And then she also wears a lot of blue, which is also.
Oh yeah. That's.
So it's like all these clues. And I'm like, is she, she's mirroring the Virgin Mary, but obviously.
And she's very good too. You get a sense that Rosemary is very kind.
She's a good person.
Yeah.
I mean, the fact that she's letting all these random people in her apartment. And the scene, I felt so bad for her when she had kind of gotten her apartment in a state of bliss, you know?
Yeah.
And she puts this music on, she's got this book, and as she's lying down to read, having a moment, you know, of her, you know, enjoying, you know, herself, then the neighbors knock on the door, you know.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, girl. You know, of course she's like, come on in, and they start knitting, and it's like, oh man.
Yeah, these two old biddies are like just encroaching upon her private time.
Yeah.
And it's like also I feel like they're watching her. Mm-hmm. They're like, see, okay, have you ever seen the film Mother?
Wait,
the...
is that the... what's his face?
I know. Is Darren Aronofsky.
I fucking have seen that movie.
Okay. And like, that was a confusing, violent tour de force, like whiplash kind of film. And in a lot of ways, like, the main character played by...
what's her name?
Yeah.
She's so famous. God
damn it. The Hunger Games.
Yeah, Jennifer Lawrence?
Jennifer Lawrence.
Okay.
We got there.
Yeah.
Jennifer Lawrence is playing, this, like, woman whose home is being invaded by all of these fucked up characters.
People. And then, of course, you're like, oh, you're a biblical guy. I see it. Honestly, I did not like that movie.
It's hard.
It's a hard one to watch. And I'm like, to me, I feel like, Darren Aronofsky had a big budget.
Yeah. Okay. Maybe too big.
Maybe too big. This happens. Okay. Like, yeah. Like, creatives and artists get big budgets. Sometimes things go awry.
Yeah.
And it also feels like...
I wish he'd had some limitations, to be honest, because it was too much.
It was too much. And then, like, it's like, okay, I get it. It's like a biblical thing. And then it's basically a cautionary tale against, you know, global warming, and mm-hmm. and it's just like, this is so like first year of graduate school, like kind of
like the symbolism, etc.
It was so heavy, and I was just like, wow, there's nothing really that like interesting. How like I'm getting it,
yeah.
I get it. I mean, like I see it, but I'm not like, it's not that great of a movie, and it just feels. And I, from what I understand, he wrote the whole thing in like a day, and I'm like,
on crystal meth.
It kind of shows.
And I think maybe take 2 days, Darren.
This happens to
maybe edit, have a third day to do a second draft.
This happens to a lot of like straight white dudes where they get this big success and then nobody tells them that it's shit.
Uh-huh.
And they're like, oh, this is great.
Yeah.
Genius. Biblical. Global warming. We love it. And it's like, no, it's not very good, you know. And also, did you know he was dating Jennifer Lawrence when he was making
the movie? Yeah, which is kind of a, I don't know, is that a conflict? It's kind of a conflict. Like, that's her work. Yeah. That's, and he, yeah.
I found out, going back to Jurassic Park, because I'm always going to go back to that movie, but Jeff Goldblum was dating the Ellie character after the production.
Laura Dern?
Yeah, Laura Dern.
Oh,
I know. Evidently, okay. That's a thing he does. He dates co-stars. And I'm like, okay. How can I get in a Jeff Goldblum?
Oh, yeah. Erin's an actress now. Didn't you hear?
I've been acting for ages. You know, I did it actually when I was little. My dad and my parents had an advertising agency, and I would be in these commercials.
Yeah,
and
of course.
I don't think I was very good, but all I had to do was kind of smile. And,
do you have a reel?
No, thank God. But I think that there were some pictures that were left over.
Erin Stafford, child actress,
a little like Happy Meal, not McDonald's, but like something else. And you know, I mean, it was a whole production.
I want to see this stuff.
I'll show you some of my old movies. Okay. They're on YouTube. Oh,
okay. Gosh. Really?
Yeah. My uncle uploaded
Okay, them. Listeners, get ready for a clip of this.
They're very boring. Very boring.
I wanted to make sure that I mentioned that in all of this religious iconography and references, that Ira Levin, the author of the book, is a Jewish atheist.
Okay. And isn't Polanski Jewish as well? So it's
like, I don't know. Maybe. Yeah.
I think I wrote that down.
But I wanted to mention, too, that other Ira Levin books that have been turned into films are The Stepford Wives.
I love that movie.
Yeah.
Yes. And I have a little, I was thinking about Stepford Wives with this movie.
Really? Yeah. Totally. Yeah. Because maybe it's that pressure to
conform.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Present.
When I watched that movie, the original, not the earlier, you know, later version.
Yeah.
And I was really offended because, of course, whoever plays the main character has this beautiful body. She's a beautiful woman.
Uh-huh.
And she
It might be Paula Prentice.
I have no idea.
I don't know.
But she's got these teeny tiny little boobies. And then she never wears a bra, so you can always, you know, see them. And then I was noticing this. But then when she gets turned into her robot form, not to spoil
she's got giant
she's
boobs.
She's got giant boobs. I'm like, God damn it. You know?
Well, yeah, why would you go to the trouble of making a, like, a robotic facsimile of a woman unless she was stacked?
I feel like this is something that men have told me.
She probably had like a penis that you could attach. She's like a vacuum cleaner. She just got like all of these attachments. She can do anything, Bob. I'm serious.
I just feel
Take her.
This is, you know, men are like, oh, but I love your small boobies. And it's just like, are you...
But if I could magically make them giant...
So that's always a fear of mine. But yes, I love that movie. I love that story because there's something going on in the 70s where women were taking a lot of like sedatives. Like they were
Valium.
Valium. Yeah. It's like, fuck.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, you know, the oxycodone Stackler family.
Yes.
Well, they were also behind the Valium trend or what have you. They had information that it was addictive, that it was a problem, and they thwarted FDA rulings and made Valium a real part of the culture.
And from what I understand, a lot of the people affected by opioid addiction are white women.
Uh-huh.
And it's like they knew that they were...
Because you can go to the doctor.
Yeah, and it's accessible.
Uh-huh.
And they're probably bored because they're housewives. And not to say housewives are bored, but like, you know...
Yeah.
And so it's just...
Here's a way to keep you sedated.
Uh-huh.
And, like, if we can do it with consumerism, with, like...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Hyde, I love this movie. I loved it from the first 5 minutes that I watched it.
I'm glad you got to watch it.
Me too. I watched it alone, which was... something else. And then I had to go to baby shower. So, perfect timing.
And I hope this isn't, like... insulting in any way, but when I watch Mia Farrow, I can see you.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
Because
you know you're both very fine boned and cute and like and sweet. You know,
I really felt like we connected in this movie. Just our sensibility, and our like, but we do have our breaking points. It takes a lot to get there. But sometimes we do stay on our ground.
Yeah,
and. Fuck off if you're going to criticize our hair.
Yeah.
Because that's a big deal. Okay?
Well, if I'm going to be completely honest too, I identify with Rosemary Woodhouse as well.
Okay.
Because I feel like I've been in situations in my life where people that would say like, I'm doing this for your own good, or like, I have your best interest in mind, or like, I can do these things. I can decide these things for myself.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So, I think it has a universality.
You know, and I'll probably edit this, but when I was dating you-know-who.
Yeah.
And he would get really frustrated that I wasn't more assertive. And
but he wouldn't have liked that.
And I was like,
You'd be the first one to fall, motherfucker.
Yeah, I was like, you know, that's why I think you're attracted to me. Because I'm not, like, I give in and I'm very accommodating.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not going to push unless I am, like, in the streets of Paris breaking up with you.
Yeah.
Because I can't take it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
he wanted a sparring partner.
Yeah.
He still wanted to win. He still wanted to dominate.
Yeah.
He just wanted you to fight more. Like a fish on a line.
He wanted me to fight battles that he thought... It was like not battles against him, against other people, and especially like friends and family. Like you just stick up for yourself, and it's just like, okay, like I'm a grown woman, so like I can decide the battles that I want to fight. Because sometimes you have to decide if a battle is worth fighting.
Mm-hmm.
If I had a demon baby, I would hope that I would have. But you know, it's one of those things. I think, especially with women, and it's like a part of their identity of getting pregnant, and your identity changes in ways, you know, and it's like to give that up, to be asked to like abort or, you know, would be really difficult.
Right. Like these are difficult enough without people getting involved.
Oh,
people we will never meet.
And these poor women who get, this is why I ask about pregnancy, because it's like, there are so many options out there.
Mm-hmm.
And
well,
Are there? Well, no, probably not. Yeah. But like, as far as like the prenatals and the vitamins.
Oh, sure, sure, sure. Like, lots of different schools of thought.
So much. And it's like, how do you weed through all that?
Yeah.
It's a lot of decisions that have to be made. I do not envy that.
And you know, you could be making choices unconsciously.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you know, we know you don't smoke and drink when you're pregnant now, but they didn't know that in the 60s.
This is, okay, uh-huh. Hi. This is, I'm going to get on my soapbox here about pregnant women. But
and get this, ready for the hate mail.
It's okay. I'm ready for it. Listen, pregnant women and women in general, but definitely pregnant women get treated like children. Rosemary totally was treated like a child. Yeah. And here's the thing. Here's the thing that I don't care who hears it. Pregnant women, it is perfectly fine to have a glass of wine.
Right.
It's perfectly fine to have a beer in moderation, just like everybody else, and it will not hurt your baby. But here's, do you know why they tell pregnant women not to drink?
No.
Because they're like, you just won't be able to control yourself. You can't possibly control. What? So we'll just say no, like a child. They treat women like children. Because I tell pregnant women, I'm like, do you drink? Because you can. Like, it's not forbidden.
Yeah.
They... But these poor women don't have caffeine. I'm like, have some coffee. It's fine.
Wow.
Like, I'm sorry, but like your fetus is not God. It's fine. have a cup. Well, it's okay. I am a staunch advocate of pregnant women and their like right to exist in a normal capacity.
Right.
You know.
Well, like I remember my mom telling me that her doctor would prescribe that she could have beer because it helped with cramps while she was pregnant.
Yeah.
Now I don't think it was to excess. That's why I'm so giant. it's all beer, but
it's all that gassy buildup.
But I'll burp and I'll be 5 feet tall. You know, like, there are things like you can't have sushi when you're pregnant.
Yeah.
And, like, was it certain unpasteurized cheeses or what have
they
you?
They take all the fun out of living.
Yeah.
Yes.
And, but I could also see, like, the incredible responsibility for it because you're like, okay, what would cause a learning disability? What would cause, like, them to be, I don't know, you know, healthy in other ways. So I'm glad I will never be pregnant and have to navigate that. Yeah.
Same.
High five.
Yes. Well, do we want to wrap things up?
Yeah. Thanks for listening, by the way. We appreciate your patronage. If anyone is going to listen to this episode.
We have listeners all around the United States and the world.
Ooh, yeah, that's right.
I know. I'll show you later.
Shout out to our listeners in far out places. Yeah, thanks.
Thank you.
Yeah. Oh, and comment. Like, tell like, leave a review and tell us who you are. Because we're so curious why somebody in Thailand or Finland or...
name a country.
Yeah, is listening. Because we've noticed that we have listeners in these places.
Noticed. We're watching our stats carefully.
Well, Aaron is. I don't know anything about computers.
And we hope that you stick around for another 30 episodes.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thanks for listening.
And, hi, do we know who our next... Is it
Thursday? I don't know. We don't have anything set up yet.
Okay. So it shall be a surprise. It might be, maybe we'll do one of my movies if we can't find anybody. But then during the summer, we're going to have a plethora of new artists and it's going to be awesome.
Yeah.
So we're all these movies.
30 down. Who knows how many more to go, but we're having fun. So thanks for being a part of it.
Thank you. Thanks, hi.
Thank you, Aaron.
Love you.
Love you too.